The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Another top female executive at Goldman Sachs is leaving, adding to an exodus of women.
The issue we've been looking into and reporting on is what happens after women are made partners. And that's where a lack of advancement into the firm's most senior ranks becomes evident.
And how an obscure server maker had a better year than NVIDIA. Plus, former President Donald Trump says he can't secure a bond to cover a $454 million civil fraud judgment. It's Monday, March 18th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Believe it or not, there's a tech company that had a better year than chipmaker NVIDIA. It's Supermicrocomputer, a once under-the-radar server maker that's become a $60 billion company. Supermicrocomputer joined the S&P 500 today and is by far the index's top one-year performer. Sales of its servers, equipped with NVIDIA's artificial intelligence chips, are projected to double its revenue this year. Reporter Asa Fitch covers semiconductor companies for The Wall Street Journal.
Clearly, the AI boom is not over yet, and people are still investing heavily in this kind of stuff. That's no surprise. Another interesting thing it says is that there's a lot of demand out there for very custom AI kind of solutions, if you will, within the industry. But what it means is like different types of AI need different types of computing power. You know, somebody who's developing self-driving car technology might need a different kind of computing setup than somebody who's doing a large language model like a ChatGPT, which OpenAI does. And the thing that Supermicro does that kind of distinguishes itself from competitors is that it uses what it calls a quote-unquote building block approach to build its servers. So because it has these kinds of building blocks, it can kind of put together things into any number of configurations for people, create an almost semi-custom kind of infrastructure. And people like that these days. So that's another thing this reveals about the AI boom is that people really like to have custom kind of infrastructure for their AI computing needs, and those needs continue to grow.
You can hear more on this story on today's episode of our Tech News Briefing podcast. Donald Trump's lawyers say he's been unable to secure a bond to guarantee payment of a $454 million civil fraud judgment ordered against him last month. In a filing to a New York appeals court, the former president said the judgment was so big that shorters wouldn't accept real estate as collateral and would require cash to guarantee the bond. Shorters guarantee the debt and would undertake paying it if Trump doesn't. Trump has asked a New York appellate court to waive the bond requirement while he appeals the judgment, arguing that paying now would cause him irreparable harm. If the court turns down his request and he's unable to obtain a bond, New York Attorney General Letitia James could begin enforcing the judgment next week. The judgment stems from a ruling that found Trump falsely valued parts of his real estate empire for financial gain. The judge imposed $355 million in penalties, plus interest, meaning Trump's debt is growing daily. U.S. lawmakers are staring down another deadline Friday to pass six remaining bills to avert a partial government shutdown. Yes, again. You may remember the last time this happened. It was earlier this month. Well, even with that deal, there were still a couple of unfinished bills on the table. And now it's about time for lawmakers to take care of them, too. Joining me now to explain is Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Katie Stetch-Ferrick. Welcome back, Katie.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Katie, I have this question, and I'm sure our listeners may as well. How in the world are we staring down another potential government shutdown?
I know. We've been on shutdown watch since, like, September. You know, Congress has just been kicking the can on these deadlines. I mean, they face an annual deadline by September 30th to figure out what the budget, split up the budget for federal agencies the next year. And we've had a lot of chaos, and they've had to move deadlines several times. And Congress has waited, quite frankly, to the last minute to give themselves what have amounted to four extensions on their homework. And so we are in yet another shutdown week. We've just had a lot of deadlines, and they haven't finished it. What is left on the to-do list is very small, and we're down to a few limited fights. And while we do have a shutdown, that deadline, and while some funding would expire for federal agencies after Friday night, if nothing is passed, I do feel like once they pull through, we have a little bit of a break on shutdown watch.
So what are these bills under consideration this week? There's six remaining bills that would avoid a shutdown?
Exactly. So every year, the way Congress funds itself is it splits all of its budget up into 12 different bills, and the bills have different agencies under each of them. They've already passed six of them, but we are waiting. The final bills include some of the biggest bills, the bill that would fund the Defense Department, the bill that would fund the Treasury Department and Homeland Security and Health and Human Services.
And what are the major hurdles to getting that done?
There were a lot of last-minute fights related to this. One was really interesting, whether or not lawmakers should give themselves a raise. They haven't had a raise since 2009 to their $174,000 a year salary. There was a dispute over whether a UN agency that provides money and humanitarian aid to Palestinian refugees. In January, the Biden administration paused some of the funding when it was found out that there were some folks connected to that agency involved with the October 7th attacks in Israel. There was some back and forth between lawmakers over whether that pause should be permanent, how much money should flow to this organization. At the last minute, there were some other disputes over DHS funding and how much money can go to border agents and a couple of other DHS priorities. And there was some disagreement over how much money would flow to different pots within that organization.
That's Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Katie Stetch-Ferrick. Coming up, Goldman Sachs is losing Stephanie Cohen, one of its most senior women, and the latest in a string of women to depart the company. More after the break.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
An exodus of top female talent continues at Goldman Sachs. We report exclusively today that Stephanie Cohen, one of the firm's most senior executives, is now exiting. People familiar with the matter say she's heading to a new role, Chief Strategy Officer at cloud services provider Cloudflare. Cohen's departure is just the latest in what has been a string of departures of women partners. As the Wall Street Journal reported last week, many are getting better offers elsewhere. Reporter Anna Maria Andriotis has been reporting on what's happening at Goldman, and she joins me now with more. Welcome back, Anna Maria.
Great to be speaking with you.
So, Anna Maria, what I'm trying to suss out here is how much of this relates to general turmoil at Goldman versus what's specific to women's experiences in the workplace there. Why are so many women leaving?
This is a complex question, and the reasons are nuanced. There isn't just one. So first of all, there have been a lot of changes that have happened at Goldman in recent years. Reorgs of different divisions, reorgs on a firm-wide basis. And that has impacted both men and women, both of whom have been leaving the firm. But separately from that, it's been hard to come away from this reporting and hearing about people's experiences and looking at it, all of it in front of me, without the impression and the understanding that there is an element here that is gender related. When women reach partner level, and partner is pretty much one of the highest levels you can reach at Goldman, what emerges following that several years into being partner for a number of women, what has contributed to a number of them leaving has been effectively what looks like a ceiling. And that ceiling is basically women who strive to become a co-head or a head of a major division, be it global banking and markets, be it any of the other two or three major divisions that Goldman has at any given point, or CFO, or being a serious candidate to become the next CEO. There have been just recurring experiences and stories of women hitting a challenge there, a roadblock to getting those positions.
So how many women have left the firm in recent months?
Roughly two-thirds of the women who were partners at the end of 2018 have left Goldman or no longer have that title of partner. This is according to a Wall Street Journal analysis that was a big part of our reporting. The same can be said of just under half of male partners at the time. By far, the most senior executives and senior women at the firm to leave is Stephanie Cohen. In addition, a few weeks ago, another very senior executive who's been with Goldman for roughly 30 years, Beth Hammack, and a longtime partner at the firm, announced that she is retiring from Goldman. Both of these women have had extremely senior positions at the firm. And out of Goldman's 25-person management committee, there are two women who are on that committee who have revenue-producing positions at Goldman. And that is Stephanie Cohen, Beth Hammack, the two recently announced departures from Goldman.
Anna Maria, I remember your reporting on this. This was an explicit goal for CEO David Solomon to recruit and retain more women in leadership. So why isn't it working, and what's the firm's plan to address it?
It's difficult to answer why it isn't working. A good amount of this has to do with positions opening up high up the ranks. And the higher up the ranks you get, there's just fewer seats for people. And it's obviously extremely competitive. You have these one-off situations that, looking back on it, on some levels, it almost seems like missed opportunities for the firm, right? This isn't about checking the box just to check the box and say, okay, we put a woman in this spot. And that's what has not resonated well with a number of women senior executives at Goldman, those who've left, those who are still there, as well as even some male partners who I spoke with. Nobody has solved this issue of, you know, women being more present high up the ranks at big banks. But when you look at competitors of Goldman's, you see that they've made more progress. David Solomon sent a written statement to the Wall Street Journal as we were working on this story, and he stated, "Advancing women into our most senior ranks is an area where we have not accomplished our goals. Our longer-term success depends significantly on developing female partners in senior roles." Now, the firm talks about advancements that it's made elsewhere with regards to recruiting more women out of college, making more women vice presidents, managing directors, and also adding more women to its recent partner classes. But the issue we've been looking into and reporting on is what happens after women are made partners. And that's where a lack of advancement into the firm's most senior ranks becomes evident.
Wall Street Journal reporter Anna Maria Andriotis, thank you so much, Anna Maria.
Thank you.
And a call out to you, our listeners. There's been a push for unionization in college sports, most recently at Dartmouth. We'd like to hear what questions you have about what that means for colleges, athletes, and sports generally. Send us a note, or even better, record a voice memo on your phone and send it to wnpod@wsj.com. That's wnpod@wsj.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 212-416-4328. Just be sure to include your name and location, because we might use it on the show. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé, with supervising producer Michael Cosmides. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.